We just had Heron. When we
see that, you set up it could. Well, you have to refresh the thing there.
When we did all the settlement.
Welcome to the September 25th, 2019 regular meeting of the Kingston Port Commission. Comments from those in attendance will be allowed upon recognition of the chair. Please identify yourself by stating your name. If you would like to be added to the agenda for a future meeting, please contact the port office at least 1 week prior to the regularly scheduled meeting. Please submit your documents and or presentations at the time of your request. So I'm going to call this meeting to order at 9:10, and can we all stand for the Pledge of Allegiance? And I'm pretty sure it's on the other side of that wall.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
So, our first item is approval of our agenda.
And I move we approve the agenda as written.
I second that.
The only thing is at the bottom it says April 24th.
Oh my God. Well, I'll put my motion to correct that to today's date.
Any other discussion? No. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. So, public comment period. Do the Andersons have anything to say? Oh, okay. You guys want to wait for the last one? Okay. Do you guys have any public comments? Okay. So the consent agenda. These matters are routine and will be enacted by one motion of the commission with no separate discussion. If discussion is desired, that item may be removed from the consent agenda by a commissioner. And the items on here are our September warrants. You guys see them? But they didn't get printed out.
Yeah, I don't think they got printed. Oh, hang on.
Our new assistant to the ED is coming on the first week of October. Yeah. Yes.
Yes.
Last night. So what do we do in this kind of case? We don't have the warrants here, so I guess we cannot, we're going to have to, unless, if you'd like to text Greg, and since he's down there right now, maybe he can bring that back. So can we move that to later?
Let's do that, yes.
Okay, let's move it to before the public comment period. So it will take the place of 8, and we'll move public to 9. Is that okay with everybody?
That's fine. I think that works.
Okay. Financial report. Greg is not here, but I had a chance to look it over. I think it looks really good. It's looking better. Do either of you have any comments or observations? Because I know he would like to. Should we move this to later? That way he can say what he wants to say since he's not here. Okay. So we'll move this to right above the consent agenda. Okay, we're going to move on to presentation by Olympic Property Group regarding future development plan at Port Gamble. Are you guys able to plug in yet or not?
It doesn't look like it.
One of the thoughts I had is paper copies.
Yes.
You've all seen it?
Yes, we have. But
But these folks haven't.
Yes.
But we could just sort of walk through it if we don't get on the other thing is I can cast it.
He has to go back down because he doesn't have a right connector.
Just remember if he cast from the phone,
he doesn't have a phone.
Well, the one I'm having conversation with someone there, and it will work from this. Well,
okay,
Greg struggles. We just brought a backup in.
Okay, thank you.
Yes,
yeah,
well,
we can okay.
I can get one of my copies.
Okay.
Or she might have it.
Oh, she has another.
Yeah, she's okay.
So would you guys like to introduce yourselves to our public?
Yeah. So, were you guys there last night?
No.
Okay, so I'm John Rose with the London Property Group. This is Linda Barry Mermaid from the London Property Group. I think I've met you before.
Oh, great. Pardon that. Pardon me.
Oh, hi, Greg. And anyway, so the idea here was that we've been hit the road and talked about the Fort Campbell redevelopment project that we've been working on since I was 12 years old, I think. So we're going to project it, but we're going to go through here, and I'm just going to keep this just about as light and as informal. And these guys have seen it at least twice each. So we're going to hit the high points. So we've been working on a lot of things in North Kitsap for many years. And, starting in 2007, our company announced that we were going to be exiting out of North Kitsap. Our parent company founded Port Gamble, Pope and Talbot in 1853. They created the new company, Pope Resources, in 1985. They took over separate companies. Pope and Talbot is actually bankrupt. Now they're bankrupt in 2007. And in 2007, we had 8,000 acres, and some of us chatted with our board members and said it's getting too crowded here to run industrial-style tree farms. It's not viable for the foreseeable future, in the long term. If you plant a tree today and it takes 40 years to grow it, we don't know if you're going to get what kind of conditions it's going to be when you get the tree out. So we need to start moving out. We had a choice on that, and so we put together kind of a vision for all of our holdings that all kind of fit together in a bit of a strategy. And so on this page, what we talk about is what are the pieces. We have two new communities we're working on. The first one is Arborwood, which is just down the road here. We've been working on that since 1991. And there's 750 homes. And then Port Gamble, which will have roughly 260 new homes and some commercial. So those were really important pieces. We had the 8,000 acres, and what do we do with the 8,000 acres as we exit? How do we exit? And then we knew there was some sort of, we're in the middle of this environmental cleanup in Port Gamble. So all those things wanted to fit together somewhat in a strategy and a vision.
Look at you! Look at
that. There we go.
That's the old-fashioned way. Beautiful. All right, go to the next. So in 2007, we held a meeting at the Kingston Junior High. We put up signs. We said we're going to do something with this 8,000 acres. We noticed there's a lot of people that enjoy walking on the property and using the properties. And we announced that we'd exit, and we knew a lot of people would be concerned about losing the recreation that went along with the tree farm. Because there's people up there all the time. So we hatched a concept called the String of Pearls, which was the idea of taking all of our unique little North Kitsap communities, Hansville and Kingston and Fort Gamble, Baldo, all of them part of the old Mosquito Fleet Trail, and linking them together on a land and water trail system. That was the idea. And I caught a lot of heck for that name, String of Pearls, I just want you to know. So the land and water trails. The water trails were easy to put together because you don't have to purchase any land. All the destinations were already there, and it was a matter of organizing them and linking them together, getting consistent signage, and then the our trail system got linked into the National Water Trail System that's in Puget Sound. So that was the first you know, sort of complete part of the vision. The folks who worked really hard on that were John Coons at the Outdoor Center and Patty Rappo. They really drove the Forest and Bay project had several false starts to get going, but it ended up being an effort where the people from all over North Kitsap banded together. I think for the first time in my memory, we had people of really different backgrounds, and towns and tribes and developers and timber company all working together on a vision. It took 10 years, and at the end of the 10 years, the county's park system grew by 4,000 acres. We had already done the first part of the Heritage Park a few years ago. So if you go back, or go forward, thank you, that one. That slide shows all those colored properties owned by the company in 2007. And by 2017, when the whole Kitsap Forest and Bay project ended, all the stuff in the green was owned primarily by Kitsap County, and a little piece is owned by GPC, Great Peninsula Conservancy. And the Sound Olympics Trail idea is still alive and well, and actually gaining a little bit of momentum. That's the idea of a trail to the Olympic Coast. And you can see there was some strategy with regards to that we had. So the Arborwood, people there, both now sitting, people who live there will now be sitting next to major, you know, major public parks. So we moved a bunch of land and ourselves and our future residents and hopefully the residents that are already here. The lands, we still own about 2,500 acres of land, so we're working on plans for those as well. The Port Gamble Heritage Park is a real monster. It's huge. It's in total about 4 miles long, a mile and a half wide. It's a 3,600 acre park. In comparison, it's larger than the entire city of Paulsboro, which is 2,800 acres. It's bigger than, almost three times as large as the Kingston UGA.
Right.
So we got a big holding there that is going to be there forever, regardless of how many jillions of people come over that area or space. Set right now. What made it work? The only way this could work is if Pope agreed to hang on to the trees. So there was just a limited amount of money to make all this happen. And we didn't particularly want to hang on to the trees because going out doing a timber harvest on publicly owned lands is not a pleasant task for our foresters. It's complicated because there's trails everywhere, and every time we do a harvest, there's somebody's upset about the trail system. It's not safe. You know, we have had a confusion with who's putting signage up. So it's a lot of work for our timber guys, but it's the only way to make the thing happen. If we didn't keep the trees, the county would have bought, you know, probably 20% of what they bought.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, this is the fourth cut.
Yeah.
This is the fourth harvest out there. And so far, the harvest, you know, the land recovers and regrows. And but this time, it'll be the last harvest. And we have 25 years from the day we signed this deal with the county to harvest the trees. One of the reasons you see so much harvesting on our land now is during that 10-year period, the community asked us many times, while it was trying to figure out what to do, it asked us many times to not harvest the North Kitsap. And our company is on a sustained yield, which means that we cut the same amount of trees every year. So that never changes. So in 50 years, unless we've grown the company, we cut a sustainable amount every year. We don't overcut it. But what it meant was it threw our rotation off. We had to cut in other counties more than we would have, and we have to make up for all the cutting we didn't do in North Kitsap now.
Yep.
And so that's why you see an acceleration of that. We still need to do some things to complete our portion of the vision, and we're going to be donating trail easements to Kitsap County. So so that our part of the String of Pearls is complete. There's a piece between River Road, or between River Road and Miller Bay Road, we call the Divide. It's a really key connection and hub for the trail system, and we'll be contributing trail easements and then parking areas for trailheads in various places. The cleanup of Gamble Bay, before and after, this was a very, very big, very dramatic project. Linda managed and drove the cleanup project. We started in 2002, but the in-water started in 2015. We dredged 110,000 yards of sediments out of the bay and put them in back of town. There's a little mountain in back of town. The shoreline itself that was in the cleanup, if you can look at the before and after, there's much better habitat there than the concrete chunks and the steel and the blocks and all the other things that were there. So the site is dramatically different now. Next, please. So we started in 2002. Pope and Talbot was paying for some of the, they paid for some of the landfills and some of the cleanup. And then they went bankrupt. And that left us as the only people paying for the cleanup. That was a real disappointment for us, because the most expensive part was that in-water cleanup. It's the largest pile removal project in Puget Sound history. It's not good to make the history books that way. 8,500 piles came out.
Wow.
And then all of our overwater structure is gone.
Yeah.
All of our old docks are gone. Next. One nice outcome of the cleanup was we worked on a joint project at the Department of Ecology. They put in $2 million. We put in about $3.5 million. And together with the Kitsap PUD, we built a brand new wastewater treatment plant. When we did that, we pulled the outfall out of the canal that had closed gooey ducts and shellfish harvesting, as all sewer outfalls do. And then the new wastewater treatment plant is actually tertiary treatment. It's like reverse osmosis. It pulls the effluent through a microfine filter, and the PUD produces water that's of drinking water quality, and then puts it up and puts it back in the land through a drain field. So it goes back into the aquifer, the recharge, and it flows, and it stays out of the canal. So that was a huge project for us. It was a big project for harvesting gooey ducks. And it was definitely one of the other positive things. This is the old outfall pipe that got removed. So this is an important slide. If you look at the slide closely, you'll see how many homes were in Fort Campbell at one time. And this isn't necessarily at the peak. We think this is about the 1940s. The real peak was the late 20s and 30s. The town started to go in decline as soon as the service station was built. It was the last building built in Fort Campbell. And like other small towns all across America, people started commuting and using their automobile, and people no longer wanted to live in town. They wanted to live in their own property. They didn't want to live on company property. They wanted to live the American dream, get their piece of land and raise their families not inside company property. And so from this point on, you see buildings starting to disappear. In fact, I just even noticed last night down on the mill site, it was a very, very large structure
on
the mill site.
Oh,
there's the general store, there's the hotel. I think the annex might have come down, but there was another just large hotel right over in this area. The place had 700 to 800 people living in it. When the mill shut down, in 1995, our Economic Development Council, as it was called back then, got very involved because they were very concerned about the loss of all the great blue-collar jobs that we have there. and how we're going to, and Port Gamble was viewed as the only working waterfront in Kitsap with deep water. So the idea was, what can we do to get those manufacturing jobs back? And how can we use this deep water port? That was the thought. And then the other concern was, are they going to shut Port Gamble down and demolish all the buildings? That was a big concern. So what are they going to do to the town? But I think the company stepped up, and we've kept the town going. And we actually started a revitalization effort. Yes, sir.
Is the new sewage treatment plant on this picture somewhere?
It's back by that farm. Okay. The farm
it's way back in the hill, up by the hill.
Give it down at the bottom.
Okay, so it services Port Gamble?
Only.
There's, I think, in structures in there?
We've always had sewers running through town.
Yeah, okay.
But it went to a small secondary wastewater treatment plant that's on the west side of town. That got replaced with a pump station that now pumps to this new sewer treatment plant and then pumps it up to a large drain field up on the hill.
And what happens to the sludge?
The sludge is like every other wastewater treatment plant. It gets collected and brought down to Bremerton or elsewhere where it gets treated and disposed of. Part of the revitalization was starting a wedding and events business. We're the only commercial timber company that does weddings. We have tons and tons of wedding and non-wedding events, and the idea was to get people to start using town again so that we could then convert a lot of those residential buildings in town into businesses, and without the events it would bring them on the map. And so today we have 23 small businesses, and we've got restaurants in town. The town still loses up to about $300,000 a year. Our annual operating loss has been that way ever since the mill closed during the fire. So it's not sustainable. It's not sustainable. Everything. It's mowing the lawns, it's fixing the pipes, it's paying my staff. Huge commercial property that doesn't make enough money to really justify it. So we need to do something, and we need to finally develop the town so that we can sell homes individually and move on. So as we look forward, what are our priorities? One is to preserve and enhance the character. This was built as a lost building for the town, and that's what it's going to be in the future. Our wedding pavilion, the Hood Canal Vista Pavilion, is the first major new town service station, if you don't count the espresso stand. So we hired two architects for that. One was a consultant that advised us on the scale and roof lines and the look of the building in order to have it come out and be compatible with the town as it is. And then the regular architect to actually draw drawings. But people, a lot of people drive through, they don't notice that building as they drive through as being something, ooh, that doesn't fit. It adds to the character and the landscape well. So the character is going to be preserved. I worked in Port, so vitality is a big deal to me. I worked in Port Gamble, or Port Ludlum. It's a project the company developed over in Jefferson County. It's a golf course community. It's a retirement community. And the thing I noticed there is when you have just one demographic that is an older demographic, it doesn't feel good. And I always want Port Gamble to not be Port Ludlum. Beautiful project. People love it there. But you're not really welcome to bring your noisy kids to the community pool. And that's just not something we want to do again. So part of our goal is to make this place busy and bustling and vital with music and events and have it not be a place to die, to be a place to live. And that's really important to us. But we also, as we do that, we're going to be cleaning up kind of past habits and lifestyles, and we're going to have a much more sustainable and green future. So that's the other part of it. So the plan that is out in the streets today is roughly the same sort of plan as we had in 2006. This thing's been kicking around for a long time, waiting to actually get into the process. This idea of moving from an industrial past to a greener future, our current zoning allows us to rebuild the sawmill. It allows us to do heavy manufacturing. And for a lot of years, that was the thought. But as we've lived with the town and then had this idea of helping North Kitsap develop a recreation-based lifestyle and economy and a visitor orientation, that's how the whole Kitsap Forest and Bay also helps the new Port Gamble plan, because we're going to be moving from, you know, heavy industry and more into agricultural tourism and lifestyle. And so that's, all this stuff kind of fits together well. It doesn't make it easy that it fits together well, it just happens to fit together well as part of the vision. We will be cleaning up the town in different ways. There's the environmental cleanup, but as we build new storm systems, nearly all of the existing roads in town, including the portion of the highway that comes through town, will get stormwater treatment for pollutants. So stormwater quality, everything that in town will go through some sort of a cleanup, stormwater cleanup system before it is discharged. And then almost none of the development will discharge to the bay. We were able to get most of the discharge to go to Hood Canal, which is better mixing. And there's not many places that can say that. I mean, the whole highway system that runs around the bay, that's untreated. Most of the streets in Kingston GA are untreated. All our highways are untreated. And it's nice for us to be able to brag about that going forward. So there's photos of the past and a photo of kind of where we want to head to in the future. We referenced the Seabrook development out on the coast. Has anybody been out there? If you haven't been out there, you should go out there. It's a brand new, traditional old town. It's a town that was built on, or you really shouldn't see it if you haven't. It's a bit of a real estate miracle. Okay, no real estate development has ever worked on the west coast of Washington, ever. Ocean Shores. And it's not a good reference. So
no.
Casey Roloff, in the middle of nowhere, builds this town using the principles of small town planning. Mm-hmm. And he holds to those in the middle of nowhere. And there are important differences between the two projects. They're not going to be the same, but in terms of the look or feel and walkability, we're going to walk and talk more like Seabrook than we are a sawmill town as we go forward.
Mm-hmm.
Next. Alternative one, what I didn't talk about, and did a very good job, was kind of the planning basics. I can do that here. We develop districts, planning bubbles. You know, planners always start with what, big bubbles, right?
Yeah.
And we did the same thing. So the waterfront, the mill site's 27 acres, that was one planning area. The commercial center, about 10 acres, was another planning area. Then all of this is residential. That all counted as a planning area. Mm-hmm. And then over on the west side of town is where the Babcock Farm is. That has been, that they were from Maine and provided produce and oxen for logging. We bought that property back to get it back in the family some years ago. And we actually have 40,000 square feet of greenhouse out there. So this is our what we call our agricultural district. And that's what the theme is. It is not in the historic district. It's not part of the historic district on the federal register. But it's an important part of town, and a new road will be built that actually goes up to the new mountain bike ride park that Kitsap County and the NKTA and Mountain Bike Association are developing. Along the way, this is going to be where the West Island Wildlife Shelter is. They're moving their hospital from Bainbridge to Port Gamble. The greenhouses will always be there, and then as you wind your way up the hill, you'll see these little commercial buildings. The idea there is wineries and creameries, and breweries and other agricultural tourism. One of the things that's disappointing in Washington, in Western Washington, is we don't have zoning in rural areas to allow wineries. So we end up drinking wine at wineries in wine tasting rooms are in industrial parks, because they're the only things with manufacturing zoning.
Mm-hmm.
And so it doesn't feel like going to Italy, it feels like going to an industrial park or a business park.
Mm-hmm.
And so we're applying for a zoning rezone amendment to get rid of the sawmills and be allowed to do wineries. So we're trading one for the other. Alternative two is the more likely outcome. It's also exactly the same as alternative one, with the exception of the mill site. And we've been working with the Pork Animal Squam tribe for years now on a kind of a common vision. And one of the elements is taking the mill site and not doing a full development on it. And taking two-thirds of the mill site and selling our development rights to create a conservation easement, so that about 16 acres will remain as open space. And they've gotten the grant money for that, and so that's likely going to be the outcome that we choose as we go forward. The ownership of the mill site, the ultimate ownership, has not been decided yet, but we're open to ideas. If you know anybody who operates waterfront parks, we've also chatted with Kitsap County about that, the idea of taking that over. I think it would be one of the most well-used and loved parks in any park system, because
mm-hmm.
you can have dinner and then walk out and take a stroll in open space. I think it'll be extremely popular. Mm-hmm. I didn't mention about a hotel. This shows a 100-room hotel that probably won't be there. So when you go through a permitting exercise, you want to imagine what's the most intense project you might ever want to build.
Yeah.
Doesn't mean you're going to build it. It just means that if you don't envision the most intense and you actually try to get a hotel, if you don't permit a hotel now and somebody wants it, you won't be able to have it. It's hard to go back and add more intense things.
Mm-hmm.
The reality is, just like Kingston has experienced, we've talked to hotel people as well,
mm-hmm.
and they're just like, I don't think so. These are like, you know, all the Brick Lodge, Port Ludlow, where we lost a lot of money on a hotel, and other places. They aren't close enough to conference business. And everybody, every single Airbnb, every guest house, every hotel is 100% full from June to Labor Day.
Mm-hmm.
But then the dark months come, and we do not have a good shoulder season. And then occupancies drop typically to about 40% in these kinds of locations,
mm-hmm.
and it will not sustain itself.
Yeah.
And these days, do we really need a hotel? Do you really need a hotel? So what we're thinking about doing, and it's almost, this is kind of a newer way of thinking, we want the effect of the hotel, we want the effect of people that are out-of-towners. I love having out-of-towners in our town. I love having out-of-towners in Kingston and in Bainbridge. Other people don't like it. I happen to like it because they're excited to be here. They spend money at the restaurants. Then they go home. But they add a festive feeling, like, oh my God, you must live in a great place. If people spend their valuable vacation time coming to visit with you.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's really super healthy. Other people just don't like the crowds, but if you want to be vital, it's part of being vital. But to replace the hotel function, we're now looking at putting more residential in town itself.
Mm-hmm.
And with Airbnb being so easy and so easy to do, it's one of the things that makes Seabrook so successful, mm-hmm. is their rental program.
Yeah, right.
It's absolutely a huge part of their success. It would not work without mm-hmm. their rental program. So if we can put 30 to 40 residential units in town and create a rental pool, then you don't have all the risk of building some hotel that's not going to work.
Uh-huh.
And so we really like it. However, Airbnb in the rest of the town probably does not work. We're going to have some narrow New England streets. There's not going to be enough parking. And people, It's an Airbnb on a 5-acre lot is one thing. To Airbnb on a 4,000-square-foot lot is a completely different thing, mm-hmm. and it will not be a good solution for people. So it's not like we'll Airbnb the rest of it, but in town it makes a heck of a lot of sense. So, next. That's it.
Could you say again, you mentioned something about a medical facility moving up there from Bremerton?
It's a wildlife facility.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, what's on the wildlife shelter?
It's on, it's currently on Bainbridge.
What about Bloedale Reserve?
By Bloedale.
Where we take all our birds that fall out of the trees
yeah.
to them, and they're fabulous.
Uh-huh.
Lots of raccoons.
I imagine you've also looked at whether you want to have a marina so people can come to Port Campbell by boat, but that, no?
First of all, the trouble with marinas, and it would be wonderful to have one. Make no mistake, it would be wonderful, but it's also not necessary. And the downside of that, of the marina, is that so we've got a tribe across the way that uses the shellfish, A, for their economy, and also people subsist off the shellfish. Mm-hmm. We just cleaned up the bay. Our cleanup actually opened up half the bay, the west half of the bay, which was closed to shellfish harvesting, and now the whole bay is open. We don't want to be the ones that shut it back down. And the bay is closed. It's got a very narrow neck. There's not a big river that comes and flushes. And it's not worth it. It's just not worth it. So we're not thinking about that right now. But we would like a dock. We'd like to get a small dock.
Yeah. Has there been any casino discussions?
No. Not at all. Not by anybody. Not by anybody, including us, and no tribe is interested in that. And tribes want to work on their, they want all their stuff on their, on their reservation.
Right.
So, mm-hmm. And we don't need it. We just don't need it.
And no discussion about lowering income housing?
Not yet, not in this location. Everything we do here costs more. Every time we dig, it costs more. This is not the place for affordable housing. We do have an idea for affordable housing on our board project. And that thing may be getting going next year. We should probably do the same sort of thing on our board. It's been a while.
That's a good idea.
We've done that together, and there's new commissioners and new staff.
Uh-huh.
And
Is it something you'd like us to advertise more to invite public in?
Oh, I think we need to do our own. We do meetings every once in a while with the public.
Right.
I wouldn't want to put you through that. Last meeting was one of the hardest I've ever had.
It was
tough,
yeah.
A lot of hard meetings.
Yeah.
People were really angry.
They were a little mean.
So they have, the reality is there's all kinds of new people that have moved in here.
Yep.
And even though we've been working on this for 30 years, people move in all the time, and nobody pulls them.
Mm-hmm.
the last meeting Steve was at, man, it was uncomfortable.
Yeah.
And no matter how much we talked about an 800-acre park that's in their neighborhood, their focus was, you've got a big project in my backyard. So that that doesn't mean you should have less meetings. That means you should have more meetings. And so we're going to end up doing our own meetings that you won't have to suffer through unless you want to come watch some of us get roasted alive.
We'll
should just do it for your constituents.
Yeah, right.
Here,
yeah.
You know, and for you, so that we can... You know, have a chance to dialogue without being in a heated situation.
Yeah.
At one time, we were talking about a ferry dock or being able to move.
Yeah, there was when the WashDOT closed the Hood Canal Bridge, they were looking for a place to land a ferry boat that would have a lot of parking. And we had 27 acres flat, and we didn't have a dock, but it was a kind of an ideal setup. They were going to lease it from us, and then that would allow us to build the dock. And we had a 150-foot dock we were going to build and lease to them. But the Islam tribe objected totally, and we just dropped the project.
So it's out.
That is out. Yeah. Someday it'll be probably a small dock, but it probably won't even be that big. We need some sort of dock, or it won't be a port.
A non-port of Port Campbell.
Yeah. So, I mean, the dock is really as much for the, it's really as much for the residents as it is for any boaters.
Yeah.
I mean, to not have a dock would not be good. On the other hand, you don't need a marina. So the dock is something that you walk to with your grandkid, you know, maybe you drop a fishing line over. It's an amenity for the town. It's an important one to retain that character.
Would that be in OPG's zone of the, or would it be over by the park?
No, it'd be here.
In the same spot.
Oh, same spot it was originally.
The same spot it was. Well, there's a breakwater there. This is really protected. And you can go from the dock right up into town. That's the fastest connection.
And it's very deep water, too.
It is?
Yeah.
It's doable, so.
Okay.
So when you refer to the bay, are you talking about really from here? Or because this is not, I think this is outside the bay right
here. That is outside the bay. The bay is right here. And traditionally, there was a sand spit that came out right about here. Uh-huh. In fact, we have a midden that was associated with that original sand spit.
Yeah.
I think it's about 1,300 years old. 1,700 years old. It's older every year, I don't know how. But, so that's a huge, you know,
that's a thing.
Planning issue is to work around that. And if you look on our plan, you see there isn't any buildings on either plan where the midden is, so we don't have to dig foundations and dig into the midden. So the midden's all covered by fill. I don't know if you remember what happened in Port Angeles. Remember they were going to have a grading dock, and they dug, and they dug, and they dug, and they didn't find anything. But they didn't dig through the old fill and some native materials into original ground, so they missed it until it was really a big, bad situation.
It happened in up at Point No Point, too, when they did that new parking lot up there. They found an individual.
Oh, they did?
An ancient individual.
Wow. I had no idea.
Yep.
So we're avoiding, and you know, mitigation starts with avoidance. And so we're not going to be digging that area. We'll have probably, may not be an asphalt, probably gravel, but we need some parking, and that would be the place to do it.
Mm-hmm. Also, on our master plan, what's going through right now does not show a dock. So that would be future action.
We wanted to break those pieces of the permit apart because the dock, we don't want the dock permitting and any controversy that might be associated with it slowing down the entire plan.
Redevelopment,
How does that relate to the exit strategy? So town gets turned over to somebody else who has whatever imaginations for dock, then that conversation starts with them.
Right? Yeah, I mean, we may be the developers. That's the other thing I didn't mention last night. I mean, is we might be the developers of all the horizontal, the roads, and the infrastructure. That might be us. But you don't know. Somebody else might just come and say, we want to buy the whole town. And then it'll be up to them. So we're going to continue to work on the dock permit. It's just that we put it on hold because it created so much noise. And, you know, for 70 feet of dock, it was not worth the noise. But we also don't want to give it up.
Right.
So if we sell off to, you know, some other folks, then if they want to pursue that, they can. If they want to change the plan, they can, but I think almost nobody would in their right mind because of the amount of time it would take to really make any substantial changes here. This took a long time to get here.
At one point in time, I'll go back 2 years, there was a discussion between the board and OPG about expanding the Port District. I don't know if that conversation is dead. If it's still, that's my first question since you're all here.
Uh-huh.
Is that still a consideration or discussion between the two of you?
It just hasn't come up. It's just everybody's busy, you know, being new commissioners and us working on other things. I think OPG is open to helping with that. I think there would be benefits to both the port and the community because the port has fundraising abilities that even the county doesn't have. They have access to certain grants that the county doesn't. And as an economic development organization, you know, they have access to different kinds of grants to help support and help tourism-related activities. Mm-hmm. And that could include the new Heritage Park, the Port Gambler, could include some of the waterfront. But we just aren't, it was an idea that was at the time, and we just haven't been talking about it. Maybe that may come back. We don't know.
Mm-hmm.
We don't know. Nothing's driving it right now. Because it's complicated. It's like, we have a million complications, both of us do.
Yeah.
Is that going to be worth the complication of taking that on right now? Because it's not a small task. It's a big task. And anything you do today, man, it's hard. Everybody, at least 50% of the people don't like whatever idea you have. So is this worth it? I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not really sure.
Do you guys control the submerged lands much? Or is that, where does it get staged or whatever? Or
we don't control submerged, but we have tide lands ownership to extreme low.
Okay. Oh, okay. Right. That's okay.
So, and we transferred that with the county park. They actually have a huge, county now owns a huge tide land.
Mm-hmm.
That's a mile and a half of tide lands. So they're big tide lands.
By the bay, you get the tide lands?
On our whole property. You know, we're here in 1853, so there weren't many laws that forbid the sale of tide lands at the time. But we didn't buy submerged lands. That's not a possibility.
So, but it's been your response. I don't know how many times you presented this, which is amazing. This is a big audience, right? So you're doing us a favor. But what has been the response?
We're wearing them down, Ron. We're wearing them down.
The response
people
last time was good.
I mean, people have passed away since we started talking.
Last time was really good. I thought it was good.
I was expecting
some fireworks. Yeah. Because I missed the one that was out at Port Gamble.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so last night I was expecting a few fireworks, and when there weren't any, I was a little bit surprised.
There weren't any of them before. We held two meetings at Port Gamble.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that's what
first,
I heard.
There wasn't at either meeting. As a matter of fact, there was... You know, I've got a vibe of encouragement.
Yeah, I think so.
And
for sure. Yeah,
I don't want to die before I can buy a house there.
Right.
So there were people that showed up to all these meetings that are interested in moving there, right?
Well, I heard, too, that the people who have the houses that are across from where the wildlife sanctuary is going to go, a block away, and the ones that were closer, there's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, like 7 houses in there, that they were all on board and very excited about what was happening.
Yeah, I mean, we've gotten that impression too. Certainly anybody who bought there in the last 10 years would have to be living under a rock to not know what the plan is.
But there's
right?
something
so going on. I mean, because we're not shy. I mean, we're not very effective, but we're not very shy. And so I think the people that end up buying homes there are people who want this thing to happen.
Yeah.
It is a fun place.
Yeah.
You know, it's like living in New England, and there's a live theater, and there's great restaurants, and there's access to 7 million miles of trail. Mm-hmm. You know, when our staff and I were putting it together, we put on ideas that we'd want to have in our town.
Yeah.
That's why we have wineries. Because what would you want? I mean, you'd like to walk from your house to a winery and,
stumble back.
Driven probably, but I could like to get out from the wine. So it's a fun plan, you know?
Yeah.
Arborwood, I wish it was more interesting, I've got to tell you. I wish it was more interesting. It's 750 homes. There's one place where there's a little commercial, and it's located off the road where it will die, and it will. It won't be successful there. And you know, when you do a commune like that, there should be a little coffee shop.
Yeah.
There should be some little services that you do. You don't have to drive.
So, with you saying that, why isn't that being followed through with?
Because when we took that idea through, it was Armageddon. It was just seemed like it was going to be the end. People really objected hugely.
To me, that sounds almost like Indianola, though, where you've got, you know, houses around, and you've got a little coffee thing.
What would be wrong with that? Could you imagine Indianola without that store?
Yeah. Well, it's like a general store in the town, in small towns. You always had places where people congregate.
Yeah, and but it's got to be on, one of the roads. It can't be tucked behind something or it'll die. It needs pass-by traffic.
Yeah, right.
But it's an amenity for everybody who's there. And, you know, if we could get it to happen, in 10 years, nobody would be able to imagine it not being there.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
And those things are destinations. Those create walking destinations.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I live downtown Bainbridge on a boat, and my destination is the brewery.
Yeah.
Or the winery up at the Copper Top. That's what keeps me exercising. Is it the destination? And it says, hey, I'll meet you for a cup of coffee. That's how you build community.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's so important.
Yeah.
So what's the path forward here?
So we are finally officially in the county process. We had a meeting last night that was part of the official county process. And it's an environmental impact statement, is our operating environmental review document. It's an enormous document. And it's complicated, so it's going to be the review of that, which Stephen is wearing his other hat.
Put your other hat on.
Doing. it's really, for such a small, this is not a huge project, by the way. It seems huge around here because we haven't had much. But in Puget Sound, this is, compared to the stack of papers, it's phenomenally complicated. It's really complicated. So it'll be at least a year. I'd like it to be no more than a year because it's just time to get the thing going, and the company, you know, I can't always keep a board excited about this thing. I mean, I've had them say, just why can't you just get rid of it?
Yeah.
In frustration. So we got to move this thing along, really. You know, and I'm proud of the board for sticking with it, but they're business guys. And they don't live here like some of us do. So they've allowed us to do a lot with our land, with our town. The board's let us do a lot. It isn't exactly always been pure business, but this thing's got to get going. You know, it's got to go to the next stage. So.
It's a little offbeat question, and you may not want to answer it, but I hear a lot of complaints, and I'm sure all of us do, with all the trees you cut down as you go down the Bond Road, all that kind of stuff. And I did. The state hired me to do the financial analysis of Gamble Law Mill on behalf of the unions to see if there was something we could do. And you had a quirky little thing in your finance where you reevaluated the value of your timber all the time. But what is it possible to let us know what the value of all the timber was that you cut down?
And are going to continue to cut. I mean, people are surprised that we cut trees. But we're tree farmers, and we barely have a reason to wake up in the morning if we weren't going to harvest the trees. So the value of a mature stand of Douglas fir it varies, and it varies from $10,000 to $20,000 an acre. So just that's a metric you can put across not our tree farm, but any tree farm. You cut 100 acres, and it's 100 acres times 10,000.
That used to change, according to Pope and Talbot's, their finances. That changed all the time.
It does change.
For years, you would revalue it.
Oh, yeah.
And it screwed up the balance sheet, so it's very hard to understand.
Yeah. So, but that was, you worked for Pope and Talbot, or for the union when Pope and Talbot, so we're not Pope and Talbot. So we ended up with all the land. Pope and Talbot kept the mill. So we run that exercise now ourselves all the time. We're always rerunning our growth projections and our growth models. And then you go out and cruise a stand of timber, and then we do something, we measure something called cutout, which means, okay, our cruise said we're going to get 100 of these things, and the cutout tells us we only got 95. Is that because of this stand? I mean, it's moving all the time. It's a product that it just isn't a uniform product. So. And sometime way back when, somebody got a hold of some seedling that was not our best seedling. And so some of the trees that are in North Kitsap are a little bit disappointing, so that we're probably on the lower side of the $10,000 to $20,000 an acre. because we got some bad seed.
So are you going to replant up at Douglas Fir?
We'll replant up at Douglas Fir, and then there's, you know, the community's talked about supplementing that once it gets established with, you know, other species, so it gets a more diverse mix than just a Doug Fir stand. Mm-hmm. What would surprise most people and surprise me is, even when we plant just Doug Fir, there's a surprising amount of cedar and hemlock mm-hmm. and spruce that come up because site conditions are yeah. micro.
That's right.
Right. Yeah. So they get broadcast and brought in by the trees that were there, and they yeah. get brought in by birds and everybody else, and so you end up that our tree farms are way closer to natural conditions than people really give them credit mm-hmm. for, because there's micro conditions. You know, what works for a cedar does not work well for a fir. They're like, what?
Yeah. Right.
It's just you're not going to have that. So, but I'm always surprised that people are so surprised that our tree farms are farms.
Right.
It's hard. That's why we're getting out. That's why we're leaving. It's too hard to do it here. Mm-hmm. People just think that never gets cut. It's just always been there. And it's a farm. And, you know, our farms have a lot more wildlife than a corn farm. But people, sometimes I think they'd rather have us turn it all to corn. And they feel better because corn is sentimental. And stumps are ugly. And so you get this strange place where actually your farms have tons of wildlife. We've got the top of the food orb, the animal kingdom on the heritage park. There's cougar and bear up there. Mm-hmm. I mean, they're not there unless there's a decent ecosystem. Mm-hmm. That's just how it is.
Yeah.
But it doesn't look nice. You know, it doesn't look nice. So. But man, does it open up views.
Yeah, exactly.
If you go to, I kind of like to go to a lot of different meetings to hear everybody's perspective.
Yes.
And if you go to the environmental meeting, maybe even one here tonight, but I tell you, what you hear in those meetings is interesting, and some of it doesn't make a lot of sense, but they're saying, I don't even know what to repeat what they're saying, but I don't hear you talking to the public about what you're doing, if you're going to replant it, how you're doing that, because a lot of them hear what they're saying and they point to where they're meeting.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying they're wrong, I'm not making a change.
We should have been out more during this last 2 years of glyphosate discussion. You're right here. You're a little bit preaching to the choir here. From, you know, I don't run the company, so I just do my little thing.
You'd have to go in costume if you went to that meeting.
But, you know, do people want to hear the truth or do they want to hear? I mean, the truth is, the places, if we leave Hansville unsprayed, people will not remember us well in 10 years because Douglas Fir will not come up through Scotch Broom.
Yeah.
And if you've ever let your yard go for a couple seasons and then try to get the blackberries out after that, that's what Hansville's going to be. And people who are going to remember this conversation really differently. We spray once every 40 years. We use this chemical Roundup because it adheres to plants and soil and doesn't go into the groundwater. The PUD just did a round of groundwater testing and found nothing. There hasn't been glyphosate found in groundwater in the state of Washington, I think, ever. Mm-hmm. Because it breaks down after it's been exposed to the chemicals for a while. That's why people use it. It changes. It breaks down. And the alternative to it are chemicals that are worse. But there's no way to articulate that and not be, you know, shot on sight. Nobody wants to hear it. That's why we're leaving, because you can't operate like this. Mm-hmm. And it isn't, I'm sorry, it's not realistic to think, well, we'll just let the Scotch broom come in for 30 years until there's another succession of trees. And there's no labor to go out and weed whack 8,000 acres.
Yep.
And in our case, many thousands of acres every year. We manage 250,000. The labor isn't there. It doesn't happen. Mm-hmm. We are able to backpack spray. We don't always have the aerial spray. But it's expensive, and getting the labor for that is uncertain.
Yeah.
And so, you know, we're like, okay, but, you know, all this land, if we cut it, it's going to be real estate projects. it's either bought by the county or it's going to be real estate, because if you don't like tree farms, then there's no reason for us to hold on to this land anymore. What do we do with it? Mm-hmm. You can't just own land and farm Scotch broom.
Well, it's worth less now.
Yeah, but now, no, that's not, but what's interesting is when the trees are on it, it's worth, I think, $20,000 an acre.
Yeah.
Right? Then you cut the trees, now a 20-acre lot's worth $200,000. So it's worth plenty now.
You know, there are two sides, and both sides get rather emotional, but just because they hear one step back, you have another step. But I would hope that you're kind of working on a way to get your side of the story out, whether you have a video and you don't have to be present to get crucified, or a slide presentation and tell them, you know, but in the community, here's what our backs are, and you can deal with your own facts, but there's got to
be. Yeah, but we are not dealing with it on our side. We're just not doing a good job of it. And, you know, to be honest with you, I don't have the license to go talk about our timber guys. I got the license to talk, come and do meetings about real estate. So, and I like to have meetings even when I'm crucified, because every time people really get educated, we do better.
Yeah.
We do better. But it is a really good point, and it's not something that has escaped me tonight.
Thank you, John.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you very much.
You know, there's always, it's so much going on. Even though you've seen it a few, there's always a good, this is nice to be able to, you know, not be making speeches and leaving. It's nice to be able to have a little dialogue.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Questions, but I can't even think of a question.
Last night's meeting was really good, too.
Yeah.
It really was.
Yeah. No, it's going as well as it's any project's ever gone
at
this point in the review process.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So, all right. Thanks for having us, and we'll
Thank
talk
you.
About our board sometime.
Yes, please.
Yeah.
Yes.
Also, our presentation, if you are interested in the presentation that we did do to the public, which is a longer presentation, is online now on the Fort Campbell Master Plan. If you Google that, that's up there. And also, of course, the environmental impact statement, all that document is online at the county. So if you go to the county website, it's actually linked on the homepage. And or if you Google Fort Campbell DEIS, it'll pop up. And it is a vast document. I don't know if you actually want to read it, but there is a lot of information.
There's
on
some really cool stuff in it.
The what I did mention last night about traffic is there is, you know, people, we have an impact on traffic, and we do have an impact on everything. Is I think that once this thing gets going, we're going to figure out, there's either going to be, I mean, Kitsap Transit's already picking up people in their homes.
Yeah.
And when this thing, there's going to be a way to get people either on Kitsap Transit.
Yep.
Or Jefferson, who runs right through town. Jefferson Transit runs right through. One of those things. One of those things is going to happen.
Yeah.
And
help us mitigate the traffic.
Yeah. Right.
It is just going to happen.
Jefferson's already communicating.
Jefferson is.
They're already communicating with Kitsap Transit.
It's a no-brainer. I mean, this was Bill. The other thing that I did mention last night is we're going to be meeting with PUD and looking at, is there a way to use purple pipe to reclaim water?
Yeah. Right.
There's no other place in the county that is more set up for it, but it's super costly.
Yeah.
It's super costly to make, and it's super costly to use, and you have two sets of infrastructure.
Yeah.
But, you know, we want this to be the most sustainable, small, historic town ever.
Yeah.
And so it's something we're going to give a serious look at.
Yeah.
But thank you so much for having us.
Thank you.
Thanks for coming to all of our meetings so that you can be educated, so when you get pinned, good answers and right answers.
The right answer.
It really, really helps us a lot, because we can't be every place.
Deer in the headlights, it's not good.
Yeah. I'll tell you that we have gotten something done well, and that is we video the meetings, because people, even when they go to the meeting, they hear something different than you said.
Yeah.
Like, they might hear the exact opposite. So you think you're talking to people and they're hearing what you say. There's some of them that are. Some of them are Facebooking, and then some of them heard something completely different.
Mm-hmm.
And when you have the video and I get sort of a nasty letter, I can write back and say, look at minute 23, where I said the exact opposite thing that
of what you think I said.
That you heard.
And man, is that helpful.
Mm-hmm.
It keeps
that's
us accountable,
good.
And it keeps our audience accountable.
Yeah.
And we've got a really great video guy who has, you know, there's the video of the presentation, but he cuts the PowerPoint in.
Mm. Oh, right, yeah.
So it's like you're almost there.
Yeah.
Right, so as I go to the next slide, the slide changes. It's awesome.
Yeah.
It's really, really effective, and it lasts forever.
Very cool.
It lasts forever. For really important meetings, it's a habit of ours.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you so much.
Thanks.
Thank you so much. That's your question.
Was there any other question?
It's great that you guys are putting in so much time and effort, and that the talent is just being allowed to die off, and, you know, it's great.
Thank you. When we first took it over, we took the National Park Service through. I was just getting to know the town, and we went to House 57, which sits on the floor, and we walked in, and there was mold, and it was gnarly. And Hank Florence from the Park Service kind of put his hand on my shoulder and said, do what you can, Florence. Do what you can. So, because they barely, if they weren't Fort Campbell, they barely justified remodeling.
Yeah, right.
But in Fort Campbell, there weren't a lot.
Yeah. So we're going to move on to approval of the amendment to Washington Project Consultants Professional Service Agreement. Greg?
Yes. Thank you, John. So we're proceeding with the SR 104 holding lot feasibility study, and as part of the support effort, you know, we've already had Washington Project Consultants engaged on different projects, working on building out our capital plan, working on a dredging in the marina and a dredge plan, and also going through and doing an assessment of our asset lists. And this would be an expansion of their contract so that they can help support us on this, on both the SR 104 feasibility study and any alternative study as well. We don't really need to do anything change in the contract. The scope of the contract is really just it's an increase so that they can spend more hours and on supporting our efforts. So it'd be like a $15,000 increase. And the total amount of the contract would be about $25,000 through the end of next year.
So this is separate from the other contract, correct?
It's an add-on. So we already have a contract with Washington Project Consultants for $10,000. We would add on a $15,000 to support work on the Lindbaugh project, the SR-104 feasibility, and the alternative study.
Then would that come out of the $40,000 piece?
Yes.
Okay.
That's correct.
Mm-hmm. Right.
I mean, in a way, it comes out of a bucket. Yeah, that would make that be the intent.
Yeah, gotcha.
And so staff is asking for commission approval.
So moved.
And I'll second that.
Any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Moving on to approval of easement for water facilities with Public Utility District Number 1 of Kitsap County.
So we were approached by the KPUD there's an existing water line, water main that comes down towards the marina, and the piping and capacity basically is undersized. And what they want to do is they want to increase the diameter of the piping so that we have, it's a 6-inch line, maybe 8-inch line, that will then actually circumnavigate and go all the way back up and join into the water line up at West Kingston Road, northeast. So I think that it kind of segues right into what the county's already doing with the Washington Boulevard project. Mm-hmm. And it would be really that's a long-term improvement in terms of providing water into our assets. So I think it's obvious to grant approval, but I just want to make sure that the commissioners are aware of it. It's kind of critical infrastructure that we should just have, and especially as we go forward, if you ever want, if we want to do, if there's any expansion, and I'm sure there's going to be growth and more pressure on the assets. But also, it's nice because when you take your utilities and you put in a circuit, you connect it all, so it's in a circular route. It's just a lot more efficient than just having a deadhead that goes out. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of different benefits from this to have them do it, and to have them do it now, so that otherwise they probably will never go back in and do it, because it doesn't make any cost. It's not cost effective if they don't overlay it with this other effort, because they're already going to be tearing into it and putting in utilities. So it's a natural. So staff is asking for commission approval to grant this easement.
So would this easement also include fiber optic capability as well, I assume?
Because
PUD number one also runs the
fiber
optic. They
do, and it's usually so, but I haven't, it wasn't specifically called out in this easement.
I see.
But normally what they do is they do exactly that. Uh-huh. They put in, they run the fiber when they run the water.
Yeah.
And I talked to them verbally about it, but it hasn't been memorialized in this, but it's more a matter of, hey, can you make sure that's included? They usually almost automatically include it in the scope,
yeah.
But I didn't see it in this, but we did have a dialogue where we said that.
Yeah.
You're talking about doing that.
I mean, it makes sense to have that.
It totally makes sense.
Would we need to amend if that was the case, if they decided to do that?
Probably, not necessarily, but probably, because the easement calls. So what they do is they take the water and then they run the fiber optic right in there, and a lot of times it's just done, but I don't have an answer to that, but I can get back to the commission on it.
You'll find out, yeah.
But I think we should move forward with this, because
yeah.
then they'll just automatically, I think, put in the fiber optics is what I talk. I go, well, you guys are going to put more fiber in and upgrade it, because there's going to be, the fiber, just as the technology keeps moving rapidly, but the easement having it in there, that's the beauty of it, is that they can just go, they have an easement basically. But this is a really simple easement too, so we just want to get something done and get it ready so that it's not stopped.
I know we've had conversations about Puget Power for future, you know, one of the rationales for the future of the ferry system, and maybe even the passenger-only ferry as well, would be for major plug-in places for converting to, you know, to electrically run transportation. But that, I think, creates that requirement for some pretty hefty power resources for recharging and that type of thing.
I think it's going to be a natural to do something along those lines. I think that's going to come out of a separate effort.
Yeah. Okay.
What I don't have a grip on is like, what is all the infrastructure that's currently in Kingston and then kind of doing that plan, you know, and reviewing it.
Yeah.
So it's something that we just need to roll into our strategic planning processes, working with the KTV and the county, and then also like all with all of our customers and tenants, like the state ferry or whoever. And then if you plan the development in this area, then you kind of know how you right-size it. You know, because they'll have to put in a couple of substations, or just maybe a substation, or if they ever want to do any cold ironing with the state ferry or get that transit or any of that. So it'll probably be funded out of it might be funded out of a separate effort or a bond. But I just don't have that information.
Right. Yeah. That's good.
But it's on my radar for sure. And if it's on your radar, I know you guys know. So.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. They'll get back to us on the fiber optics.
Yeah.
Do I have a motion?
Well, I will move to accept this contract for PUD number one for the water facility.
Do I second that motion with a question that I do want to ask before we vote on it?
Any comments?
Yeah, question. I know under number three, construction landscaping, that the grantee can remove trees, bushes, etc. within the easement and then try to bring it back to its best status.
Uh-huh.
And I wanted to ask if Ray had had a chance to look at the easement area and have any comment about what impacts that could have. Between that, and I have the same question about the county easement along the waterfront, but this is a little different space, but I'm wondering if you have comments about potential impacts.
I think, in my opinion, just looking at Mary, I believe that anything that would be in the way at all, I mean, we can definitely, it's not really that concerning, in my opinion, here.
Great.
We did conduct a walkthrough, and you get down to the nitty-gritty. So there's that corridor where they actually impact, like they disturb the dirt, and then there's the easement, which is a little bit broader area, because, but in the actual area where they look at, so you can see where they do, obviously do the site and do the utility locates. You go out there and we walked around the corner there, and then we were looking at how it was segue and what the impacts of consolidating utilities with stormwater, et cetera. But they said it didn't even look like it would impact like where the sign is, for example, where you know the sign, but that's the corner that they were looking at. So it didn't look like it would affect that. What it would affect, you know, or could affect, that we'd have to think about it, is this like long-term planning, you know, like if you'd had something. And it's more for like, the, you know, where you just obviously don't want to be digging where there's utilities. So if we were just constructing anything or we had plans already imminently, then we'd have to, that would roll into this. But we're just trying to consolidate utilities in a little area. But they do, it does have a broader area, right? Obviously it says it's like 150 foot, so.
I think my concern is probably more greatly with the waterfront.
Yeah.
Easement that we're negotiating with the county, and I generally sense that people in the outside world, other agencies, not necessarily our community, but other agencies, don't really have much awareness, because it's not on their radar, about the beauty of our marina, which is part of its draw to boaters, to us, to the whole community. And I just want to make sure that we recognize, as we look at all of this, what the impact is. How long does it take to get back together again? You know, once you've taken it all
right
apart.
Yeah.
And that's how many years of...
That's a really good point.
Yeah. And I just think we should add that to our questions that we ask of people.
I'd go so far as to say it's not just an amenity, because it's really, that park is really used by a lot of people and really appreciated, and I think that and also it's very functional the way it is now. People can, you know, transit through there, and they actually get, it's easy access for people to use it. So, you know, it was just funny, because I was just driving by some other assets, and I looked at them, and I thought, right there, smack dab in the middle, they have a substation. And I thought, man, how did they locate that substation right there? It's just the most inopportune place to be.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you don't move substations generally. That's just a big no-no. But
yeah,
I thought whenever they planned it, it's a really good point. Because you can really, you just think, oh, okay, and then you disrupt it. And then all of a sudden, like, gosh, this is crazy, you know. And it's hard to go back once it's done.
Yeah.
That's a good point.
What's the diameter of this line? That's sort of the thing I can't really see in here, but did they say anything about the size of the pipe?
No. What they did was they provided me just a hard drawing, a fake drawing, and that had it on there, I think it was, I'd say it was 6 inch.
6 inch, yeah, okay.
And the other thing it'll do is if we ever needed to put in more, you know, fire suppression or anything like that.
Yeah, for fire flow.
We can't handle, you know. So we couldn't even develop without doing this.
Yes.
You couldn't do.
But this is huge.
Anything.
I mean, it really
is. It's a big deal.
It's really good.
So I'm going to, if subject to commission approval, if you approve, then I'll execute it today.
So I have a motion on the floor, and I have a second. Any further discussion?
No.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Motion passes. So we're going to move back to the items that we had jumped because Greg was indisposed. The approval of the September warrants, they are here, and we've all, I think, had a chance to...
Yeah, I looked at them.
Okay,
I reviewed them. I really appreciated getting them. Kudos to Wendy to get those early, and I was able to look them all over, and that was really nice to be able to do that. So,
we'll
give her a thumbs up.
Motion for that?
Yeah, I'll so move that we accept the warrants.
And I second.
Any discussion? More discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
And then we're moving on to the financial report.
Okay. There's a hard copy over there, financial report. So we have largely completed, you know, the transition from a cash basis to an accrual basis accounting. And there's, you know, we have like one outstanding thing. We're just trying to make sure on the fuel inventories and how we handle fuel that that's accurately accounted for. It's just when you switch over to it, you know, where's the hard, fast stop, and then when you transition to it, just to make sure, because fuel is a big chunk of inventory and it goes up against, and then you might not, it may skew things a little bit, but on a accrual basis, it should be, it's worked out pretty well, I think it'd be fine. Cash basis, not necessarily. So a couple things, you know, the revenue would reach $1.48 million this year, which is good. I don't think the budget, you know, I'm not analyzing frankly, these numbers against the budget, because the budget hasn't really, it's more of a plan and hasn't really served as a real good roadmap necessarily for this year. But overall, I think we're doing pretty well. In August, we had about $118,400 of net operating income. And then for the year to date, so for direct revenue, we're at about $218,615. And then non-direct, which is, you know, interest expense, taxes, and that kind of thing, we have $147,000. So the total net operating income year to date, as by the end of August, is about $430,000, which is good. I think it's respectable. You know, if based on that, you know, through the end of the year, you know, we could hopefully reach, you know, pretty close to 600,000 direct and non-direct net operating income. And then on top of that, we have non-recurring expenses this year. We looked at about over 210,000. So we're examining those as we go through the budget process for next year. But if you were to add that on, then we would have what I would say is a pretty strong net operating income result. For next year, and the key thing about that is really it's money in and of itself doesn't do anything, but we really need to be able to fund our capital program, and to that end, you know, our reserves now are over $1.8 million, and so that's not nearly enough, you know, to fund our capital plan. We're defining the capital plan, what our capital needs are, at least to hit do a 5-year assessment right now. I think there are some things which we're going to have to look at, like we're supposed to conduct another dredging effort, and what's that? But we're going to lay that out, and that's going to come out by the end of the year and through the budget process for the commission's consideration. But we're still underfunded for our capital program. There's no question. We're going to need to continue to have pretty strong financial results. We're going to have to continue to watch our money, but we need to reinvest in these assets. You know, we have a bathroom that our middle bathroom, we call it, that is, you know, heavily used by customers. And then next year we come up for the biannual effort for submitting for RCO money for grant. Mm-hmm. It would be great, rather than pulling just out of our reserves for that we get some matching or significant funding from the state. There's a few things that where we have to make sure that we apply for that funding and get that money to complement it. That whole effort is going to kind of segue in, but that's what's really going to provide value to the community, is to have a sustainable port where we're reinvesting in these assets, and then we'll know whatever, you know, hopefully there's money left over, whether you use your bonding capacity for growth, or if you have to use bonding capacity just for maintaining existing assets. And then what's the business plan? What do we see in the next 10, 20, 50 years? We should really need to have a long horizon line on what our needs are going to be, because ask, you know, Warren Buffett or Bill Gates, you know, cash is king, and being able to have that kind of cash, it sometimes it seems like a lot of money, but it, in their case, it is a lot of money, but in our case, it's really just to hit our needs. It's not really wants and desires. It's just to maintain functionality. Mm-hmm. But overall, with reserves have been built back up a little bit to 1.8 and 430,000. At least I think we're heading in the right direction. And I just want to tip my hat to the staff because they've been really trying to control costs. They're very aware of it. They also do. I think they do such an exceptional job with the customer experience. And this is discretionary income for people, and people spend money here. They don't have to come to Kingston. And I get so many compliments. It's really rewarding. I know John, he goes out and sometimes they get beat up on things. But I get emails. If you sit outside and you just talk to customers, they're really complimentary. And they love coming to Kingston. And I think that goes towards being able to generate revenue and preserve, revenue streams of revenue.
Excellent.
Any questions?
No, I do have a question. It's not about the report itself. It's about the compilation report and cover letter. And the cover letter is sharply to me identifying that they basically took what we gave them, put it back out, but verify or stand up for nothing. And that this feels stronger than I've read it in the past. I don't know if it is in fact the same letter they've been sending all along. It seems stronger to me, and I just wanted to hear, Greg, what your thoughts are about that.
Yeah, I think so. I think the question is going to come out, and we just started the state audit right now. I think that I think Hearthstone is in alignment in terms of their outlook on how you handle accounting. One of the things that they have seen, okay, because they see a lot of different boards, they have seen a lot of boards struggle when they converted to the cash basis accounting. Because what happened was the understanding of your financial position for commissioners that have been doing it for decades, they was under the accrual basis and GAAP. When you switched it, the reporting changed, and so the commissioners, a lot of people in governance positions, you're not an accountant. You're looking at it, and you're not sure exactly what you're getting. And cash basis, I think, I think it's a fair generalization, is that I think it confused some of the commissioners and people, and they weren't getting enough information to make really good governance decisions. And I think that also what happened when that changed was the state audit after the IMIN, one of those IMIN initiatives, and where the state audit now comes in to do the audits of government agencies, Hearthstone, the auditors, they recommended, hey, the private sector audit firms no longer have access directly into your financials.
Yeah, right.
So they're always going to have disclaimers because they can't go directly into our accounting system and really look at it to do a true audit. We send them the information, they're assuming it's clear, it's correct and accurate.
Correct.
So there's always going to be some gap where they're going to have a disclaimer.
Yeah.
But when we talk to them now, they look at it and they say, great, because this is better information for the commission and what traditional accountants learn in school in terms of an accrual basis and a GAAP principle. So I think that Hearthstone likes the direction that we're headed, and I think that they would like to have complete access to our financials. Then they would actually sign them in a sense saying, we're signing off on them, and that's something that I'm going to bring up with the state auditor because I don't see, it was done for decades, You had a third-party auditor, they almost lived at your office. And then they would, they were auditing you. And so I think that is, it's always good. I always like oversight, because sometimes you make honest mistakes or, there should be alarms going off. Mm-hmm. But by the same token, and we brought this up in the last commission meeting, they're consultants. And sometimes if you're a consultant and you bring forward things that people don't want to hear, you can be fired and they still need to make a living. So they're always walking the line of, but if they sign off on it, then they have to be held accountable by the state and or the feds. So I think there's going to, I'd like to close that. If we're going to pay for them, I'd like them to be able to stand up and say, and say that they are, they stand behind those numbers.
And they also had a retirement too. So there's a change in leadership too. And I that's a popped into my head when I read this too. It's like, oh, that's maybe they're, you know, looking at this a little differently or.
Yeah, I think they're very comfortable with Wendy McDonald coming in as the as both the controller and port auditor. I think they're very comfortable with what they're seeing from us, because you can take this to the bank.
Yeah. Well, having the port auditor as well, I think is very beneficial for those reporting requirements as well. And
yeah. So I
step in the right direction.
Yeah, I think that they're super supportive of the efforts today.
Yeah.
I'm going to go and compare this letter.
Yeah, I was looking at this letter.
See if especially the second paragraph.
Yeah.
Very pointed.
Yeah.
And I want to know. And eventually, that may answer the question, but on the other hand, it may not. So. Yeah.
It also might be that this is Larry's standard letter.
Yes, that's what I was thinking.
He's just taken over.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
It might be his standard letter that he sends out. But it would be good to see, and maybe next time he comes. Yes?
Well, and this would be welcome, because under an accrual, basis of accounting, I think the cash flow is pretty standard. But when you're on a cash basis of accounting, it's not necessary. You're everything's cash.
Yeah.
So it's now final that we've switched, and
right.
So maybe that changes what we're going to be
the
instruction.
The oversight product.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We'll figure it out.
It wouldn't surprise me if you have an easier letter. You have more information.
Thank you. So, now we're at the second public comment session.
Oh, did we? Did we approve?
We don't have to.
Oh, that's
it's
right.
Just
yeah.
A review.
Yeah, yeah. Gotcha.
So, does any of our public have a comment? Mr. Karsmar, I saw your finger go up.
I have a question.
Okay.
Oh.
We don't have a question period. Just a comment there. But there. I guess I have to admit I'm confused on the realignment and your contracts that you talked about earlier, what the state's doing, who the engineers are. There seems to be a lot of different parts to this thing, and it's awfully difficult. I need to figure out who's doing what. And I looked at the letter that the state sent out. I'm aware that you've got money from the state. And I guess the county is doing your ROWs and that. Who's doing all this, and how do they relate to each other?
Yeah, that's a good question.
The SR-104 is being done by WSDOT.
They're being paid to do this?
They're doing the SR-104 realignment.
The realignment.
But there was money set aside.
They're doing that under their own effort. Yeah.
The money set aside for actual condemnation, purchase, that type of thing. They're proceeding with that, and they have a rather substantial grant to do that work. But they are doing all of that, state DOT.
But they have a plan.
Yes.
Okay. You know what they're going to do and what they're going to do. That's not part of the engineering. That's not part of the...
Oh. No.
Field law analysis, not
no.
That's what we're here in the court.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
But it's been discussed, because what happens, we bring it up and said, and like Commissioner McClure, she's repeated many times, what we do should be sistered and segued in with the SR-104 realignment. But WSDOT is really doing that almost, they're doing that unto themselves, right?
Yeah.
So we only just get that information after the fact. We're not getting necessarily ongoing updates, which is something, you know, we're going to... But they started that from scratch, to be honest, in terms of some of that realignment. And so they've been undertaking... I did the initial walkthrough with them. And then I didn't really get any information. They're not having a bunch of meetings. They're just going over the realignment, generally speaking. And that's the result, is that letter is really the result of what their findings are. That's why they said, hey, they're looking at the potential condemnation of these properties. This is kind of what they see. It's kind of their summary of, and I don't know how far they are in the design. I don't know if it's 30%, you know, or if it's even further than that. But that was a result of that. But that is separate from what the Lindblad SR 104 feasibility study.
Mm-hmm. But I guess I'm only half confused now.
Okay.
There's $2.4 million or something that's being set aside by the legislature or the county or somebody. Half of that's for the ROWs. Okay, that's been approved. The other part is the engineering. Where is that money being spent and who's burning that up? Is that the state? Or is there a separate engineering company? Who's doing the field flaw analysis at all?
Yeah.
Can I speak to that?
Yeah, go ahead.
The coalition of the five agencies, WSDOT, WSF, Kitsap Transit, Kitsap County, and the Port of Kingston, signed a memorandum of agreement to work on the Lindblad project, the parking structure. And that contract to do that work has gone to Fertit Engineering. I believe that is up in signed, or is it on the verge of signing?
It's on the verge, yeah, it's right at the verge of signing, yeah.
Is it, excuse me for the digression, will it be signed? I'm concerned about how soon to get started, because there's been the discussion all along of the importance of the final design on the realignment having connectivity with the final design on the Lindblad lot or whatever else ends up being there. And so that we dovetail in terms of results within a reasonable time frame, that DOT doesn't say, well, you're not ready, we're keeping going. So that's why I keep saying, what are we anticipating?
We just have a simple checklist of things that we have to do for compliance before we sign an NTP. If we sign an NTP, a notice to proceed, and we're out of compliance, it's not.
Okay, so I need to get that piece to you. Is that the only thing that's outstanding?
That's it.
Okay.
There you go.
Right, which is the demonstration that we went through a legal and complete procurement process. And I have all the background on that, so I'll put that together. Anyway, so that is Pertit, and that is all of the agencies that I mentioned. And everybody's plans will come onto the table and figure out the points of connectivity and make sure that they work together. The evaluation of the other couple of capacity analysis, fail flaw analysis, et cetera, is also being done by Pertit, which made most sense to us to do it that way, since they're already figuring out everything else about the traffic flow. And that should basically start at about the same time, and the fatal flaw analysis, the evaluation of where are we, where do we go from here, is for Lindblad and those other piece possibilities will come before us at about the same time. And that'll be the point at which we need to go and get serious. We need to talk with the community about where we go from here. Does that kind of answer your question?
It says that it still looks to me like the DOT is driving the design from the Barry Holding up to Lindblad, and that you guys have to But you have to work around it. So what they're doing is kind of a dumb thing, and you're going to live with that and then figure out your other alternatives, which are not necessarily compatible with what DOT is doing.
And DOT is aware of that, and it isn't so much that you used a phrase that we have to work around them. I see it as we have to make sure that we're working with them.
That we dovetail. Yeah,
yeah, that they dovetail.
Yeah.
Are they working with you?
Yeah, I think they are.
A big problem when they were putting in the sidewalks across the street from Coca-Cola. the county.
Oh,
some
yeah.
Some of those people swore they'd never deal with the DOT.
Yeah.
And I don't
it
know
was, it was difficult.
Changed
yeah.
or something, but it didn't look like
the,
it was very
the stormwater control was the biggest problem on that particular project. Yeah.
Cola-Cola.
The Cola-Cola and sidewalk yeah. and all those yeah. elements was very difficult. Yeah.
So on this realignment, you guys should see with who's doing what and when and how all of this is.
I'm not going to say that I'm happy or not happy until we're further into it and we see just how good of team players they're going to be. And we don't know that yet.
Well, probably ask that again.
That's fine. Maybe I'll be ready to answer. Yeah, I mean, there's no question. This kind of a collaboration among a bunch of public agencies at different levels of hierarchy is going to be challenging. But it's the only way to do it and come out with a solution that, in effect, addresses everything that's happening. We don't want to end up 3 years from now with a stormwater issue up there that doesn't match with what the county has planned. And, oh, by the way, doesn't, you know, we need to have it working, all the pieces. And that's why we need everyone at the table. Much easier if... when you could just do it your own way and forget about everybody else. We just can't. There's too many people who own parts of Kingston.
So. I guess we can look back when all this is done and you have to do the stormwater for the Lindblom parking lot. And you look at the huge capital expense that the Lindblom project with their 140-some townhouses have already done. And I assume that's going to be limited in capacity to just the current towns. But it's something I guess we can look at years from now to see did we make the right decision today, or are we redoing something that's just going to cost us a little bit more.
Mm-hmm.
What we have here is we have all these different agencies. They're all like they said, they're no chief and a whole bunch of Indians. And that's kind of what I look at. So all these agencies are, and I don't mean to be non-contemporary, but that's the phrase people use, no chief and too many agencies.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I think in this case, the contractor who's doing the architectural engineering study, Pertit, is well-versed at this kind of project, and you know, gathering, you know, everyone in one conceptual review. And so if you look at Pertit's website, they've got several projects that are very, very complicated that they've done very good work with. One of them is the Seawall project in Seattle. They've done a transit center in Everett. They really do excellent work. I was really pleased to see them awarded the contract because they really know what they're doing. So I'd invite you to take a look at their website and see kind of some of the projects they've done. It's really impressive.
Did the state issue that contract?
No, we are managing that contract.
Pardon me?
The port is managing that contract.
But did you have a say in who the contractor?
We ran the procurement.
That whole group, yeah. The five members ran that through. Yep, absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. Yes. Oh, this is gonna be they're an excellent firm. They will be handling this and wrangling. It should be nice.
When you don't have a chief, the wrangling, the collaborative process becomes core to its success in a way that it doesn't matter when you've got a top down. Then you just live with whatever ugliness happens, but we're trying to avoid ugliness and come out with a much better solution all the way around.
Well, I'm going to follow your ability to work collaboratively. The way I measure it is to see Steve's hair grow.
Great. You can look at my hair going great too. It's Laura's.
Maybe I'll have to start coloring my hair. Should I start coloring my hair?
We rely on you being there at every turn, Ron. Anderson, do you have any public comment for us?
I've got a couple of suggestions, but I'll get back to it right
now. Okay. Thank you.
Good to see you guys.
Yeah. I saw him the other day. So, Commissioner reports. Mary?
A lot of focus this last month has gone to the whole transportation projects, Lindbergh, et cetera. But a particular piece that I wanted to mention is that Kingston Citizen Advisory Committee has a transportation committee that was tasked with identifying projects that could be done with a very small portion of the state funding that came through for the Lindbergh project, I think $25,000. And of course, there's been a fair amount of turnover in that committee, and it has identified a set of short-term actions to take, ranging from signage to flashing lights, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And that committee has not been, by its own admission, very effective in terms of focusing down to solutions and having figuring out what they can constructively do and to solve the whole problem. And so the new chair of that committee is a woman named Svetlana Skalikan. And I've been working pretty closely with her about how that committee could effectively identify the transportation issues that face Kingston, which aren't, the horror is 104 and ferry traffic, but there's a whole lot of other stuff going on, ranging from transit to parks and trails and, you know, so on and so forth, bicycling. And so she's going to work with the group to identify the transportation issues facing Kingston, get a point person to deal with each issue, report every month in 5 minutes what's happened, what we need to do as a committee, and if anything.
Yeah.
And then have the rest, the next hour, be open for work on any particular topic. It really promises to be much more effective and targeted and trying to do something. And also, I think the effect is going to be that those meetings and maybe our whole community conversation kind of shift from hate ferry traffic to, okay, that's happening over there, this is happening here, and start being about solutions as opposed to how frustrated we are with the problem.
Yeah.
And so I am really hopeful, because I think KCAC is a really important, not only communication among ourselves in town, but also direct connection to Kitsap County.
Yeah.
And the more effective that the transportation conversation is with Kitsap County, the better it will be for all of us.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And so that's where my head's been.
Yeah. The nexus between that committee, as it's a subset of the advisory committee in Kingston, which is that focal point to the commissioner, directly to the commissioner, and then the other county agencies, is that connectivity to discuss, you know, this idea of walkable communities, and as Mary was saying, bicycling and alternatives to people being in a car. And then also, obviously, the car component. But they've got it separated into two meetings. I've been going to the evening meeting, which is, I believe, the third Monday at the Pizza Factory here in town. And those meetings are 6:30, I think it's 6:30 to 8 o'clock every, you know, monthly meetings. So I've been going to the evening ones, and then Mary's been going to the one during the week. I can't remember what.
Oh, it's a Friday.
It's a Friday. I think it's the
The Cafe Neo.
Fourth Friday, I believe. Yeah, right. But the meetings have been very good. Very, very good, I think.
Yes, I think there's absolutely a good beginning.
Yeah.
Do you have any others?
Oh, So I've been involved in that. And also with the Parks, Trails, and Open Space Committee, which again is another subset of the Kingston Citizen Advisory Committee. But I've been going to both of those. Not sure if everyone's aware that we had actually put in a transportation improvement project ask through that subcommittee to the county. And one of the projects we were looking at is the Barber Cutoff problem. And, you know, there's an awful lot of people that walk in the community, but we also put in a connectivity again to have the trail that goes from town essentially through the Lindvog development process, or that whole development that's happening there, and that they were required, that group was required to provide trail connectivity to and through the west side of the community. And so we're looking at alternatives right now for that trail reconnection, because the Kingston Hills neighborhood had voted to block the trail that went from their community and through. So we're looking at alternatives to that. So we've actually been working with Commissioner Gelder directly on alternatives. So this TIP project, the Transportation Improvement Project, is something that the county has a potential lead on, that they can then work with that. And then we've talked about that at the port before too, about trail connectivity and things like that too. The other part of that program is also a safety element that goes at the end of Parcells Road, where the trail that goes to Eglon goes through the DNR property. And that trail connectivity was a concept that we put in for a TIP project too, for recreating a roadway that could be used for emergency access in the event of a blockage on the Hansel Highway, so that then the community of Hansel could actually get out in an emergency situation. So that's another one that we put forth out there. The alternate would be to go through Eglon Road and then down and through, well, I can't remember the name of the side road there. It turns from Eglon Road, if you keep going south, there's a way that that's a potential connection then up into this trail system. So that's another thing that we've raised up the flagpole for that in that group. But it's been pretty good though. And then the other thing to report is, again, we've been working, you know, with this transportation review for in some different settings. The Discover Kingston event was on, when was that, the 21st or something. We had a really good outreach there with a bunch of different folks. What else happened? The Kingston Cove Yacht Club's 50th anniversary had a party that was pretty good. That was enjoyable. That's about it. That's the highlights for me. Yeah.
So, piggybacking on the Discover Kingston event, that was really good that all three commissioners were able to be there and kind of mill around. We got a chance to talk to you guys. Saw them in full uniform.
Oh yeah.
Yes, it was wonderful. It was a highlight of my evening. But I think that Discover Kingston is such a great way to bring so many different agencies together and get people talking and get people just getting to know each other in a more intimate way, and I thought that was fabulous. The EIS presentation last night was really good, too. You did a fabulous job,
thanks.
Steve, of presenting, even though you said you had no preparation on it. He actually just breezed right through it. It was really good. And learned, I think every time that John talks, even though I've heard the presentation more than once, I learn something new each time. And that's what I appreciate about hearing it more than once, too. And the one thing that he didn't mention in this one that he did mention last night is one of the things that's being required of them is, because usually when a new project happens, they're required to go to the nearest intersection to mitigate things that are going to happen at that intersection. And I guess the nearest intersection is Bond and...
Let's see, 104 and Bond.
104
road.
And Bond.
Yeah, by the gas station.
Yeah, so they're going to have to put in a turn, and he called it something else last night.
I think it's a pocket.
Pocket, where they turn to the right. Yeah. They can turn to the right, so that there won't be such a backup there in going, you know, they go left to Kingston and right to Paul's Bow.
Yeah.
So they have to put in a separate pocket lane to go right to Paul's Bow. So that was something that he didn't mention at this time. But I thought the presentation was really good. It was a small audience, but I learned a lot.
Yeah.
And speaking with the West Sound Wildlife, Lisa Hope?
Lisa
Hope.
Yeah.
I can't remember. Okay, yeah, I think that's her name. Learned a lot from her, too, that they are going to probably keep a satellite station on Bainbridge just so that people who are in that area will be able to drop things, animals off, and won't have to come all the way to Port Gamble. So they will transport themselves instead of making people do it. But this facility that they're going to open up out there, she was talking about it and how, I mean, it's going to be absolutely spectacular. And it will not only be a facility where they drop off animals, but it's going to be like a training, like an ability for people to come in and see the animals and walk around and look at them. And they just had a show out there, and they had like 700 or 800 people that came to their raptor demonstration.
They do a lot of eagle and other raptors, too, but primarily they had a couple eaglets that they just released here not long ago. That fell out of a nest, and they were able to rehabilitate them fully and get them repaired and let them go. It was great.
I'm really looking forward to them having a nicer, larger facility that they can call their own.
Yeah.
So we're going to go on to staff reports. Ray?
Hey, how's everybody? Staff reports. I'm working with a gentleman that we're very fortunate to have helping us. That's Mark Horton. Wealth of information, very knowledgeable. We're going through the assets, him and I and Greg, to determine what kind of capital projects we might be able to put forward for next year and how they'll get the solution to working on them and the solution to get them funded, obviously. And it's been, I got a meeting with him on Friday, and I just want to say that new staff members are absolutely a positive plus for us, you guys. It's really a lot of fun for me to be working with individuals, and it's just, they're bringing their talents to us. So I'm going to say, Wendy Cousins, Paul, who's a welder for 38 years on shipyards, stepped up along with Tori, our new maintenance lead, to help construct some figurines for our Christmas show. So he's down there right now, and we're hopefully going to get, I know we've kind of had to put that on the back burner recently because of the things that we've encountered this year, but we're moving forward. He's going to be here for 3 days trying to punch out a whole bunch of things for my volunteers and pacify them so I don't lose them at all with lack of interest. So I do have to say yesterday was the first day of putting lights up at the Port of Kingston, so Christmas has officially started with Marvin lighting up the waterfront. So we got big shoes to fill, like I said, Steve, again, but I expect everybody to step up and hopefully we can plug that hole and be gone as far as with Christmas, because he definitely was a major player in that. So everybody
forward and step up to the challenge. I'm going to be talking to my friend Terry Darrow at the high school, and I'm going to see if I can get volunteers from the high school down here sooner.
Yeah.
My goal is to have everything up and ready the week, the Saturday before the 7th, just so that way if we have to make any improvements or changes, we'll be ready to go. So with that all being said, we're coming up with a plan here for our wonderful tenants, our bread and butter, if you will, to make sure that they are being in compliance with what the board has to offer for rules and regulations. I've tapped a couple of my employees to help me make those calls on insurance. I'm out walking and making sure that they're doing what they're supposed to with the continuous marine extension cords, their cords, and everything else that that they need to provide. We're also working on making sure that they can't be compromised, you know, so it's all a work in progress, but it's a lot of fun, like I said, so just know that we'll have a lot of volunteers that will be out there right now helping with Christmas lights, so we're pretty excited.
Thank you, Ray.
Yeah.
Greg?
Well, and Ray and Austin, yesterday and the day before, we had a 62-foot vessel that was out, and they said, we're taking on some water, way too much water too quickly. And they had launched, and they, you know, it was a wood boat, so they hadn't, the seams hadn't really expanded, but they had just launched, kind of taken off. Anyway, they came in, they called, and they came into Kingston. And those guys jumped on it. Got, you know, we have a couple of pumps, and I can tell you a lot of places don't. They don't actually, can't help you even if they want to. Anyway, so they pumped them. They got the seam. Everything swelled. Get a little bit of time, and they sailed off. And anyway, that was pretty cool that they could be responsive like that, because it's it would have been a huge deal for the for those guys and for that vessel. They were super super appreciative, and anyway, that was pretty cool. And just be able to have people that can respond that quickly and just know what they're doing, you know. So kudos to both Ray and Austin Goff. That was pretty neat. I attended this Discover Kingston. I think that is, I got to go in the other room by accident, so I went in the wrong room. And because all the agencies were all, they all put us over, which was, it was way better to be in the other room. But because it was really, really cool and interesting. I can't even tell you. I wish I would have got to go over there. It's like going to, like, barely a carnival. I mean, there's so many different groups, and there's so much going on that I'm not really tuned into. So I felt like I should have spent time over there. But that was a great event. And next year, I'm going to try to make an effort to get over to meet more people. And between now and then, there's some groups I'd like to tap into them and get into the community more. Anyway, there's a lot of people in this community doing an awful lot of things, and there's so much volunteerism. It is a culturally pretty special like that. It is unique. Mm-hmm. So that was a really good event. And it was kind of cool that all those agencies show up too. You know, I actually tell you, in other communities, I don't actually see, I mean, maybe all these state agencies, you had the county, everybody was there.
The sheriff,
the state patrol, everybody was
state
there.
State patrol was there.
Yeah, they really showed up. And you know, you're not incorporated, but it's cool that you have, because they all have an impact, you know. And there are partner agencies that we're working on stuff with. And, you know, I wish that people had sometimes the same experience I have working with other people at agencies, because it really gets down to individual. Sometimes criticism comes towards an organization, but it's an organization made up of people. And I have to say that I have a super good relationship actually talking to some people at the State Ferry, and so they do actually work on trying to find solutions to stuff. You don't see it, and we don't always put it out there, because they also don't want to say, hey, we're trying to do this, and then if it doesn't come to fruition, then you failed. Right? And it's a black eye, instead of saying, hey, if you do succeed, now we have, and then you deliver, then you have a great. But they have been really very open, I think, in my dialogues with people. And I just want to, they know who they are, but they are really trying to help. And traffic solutions in Kingston is on everybody's radar, like in front and center on stuff. Yeah. So it's, and that's in part due to the commission and also all the people in the community being engaged. So, working on the budget, state audit started today. They'll be in for like 2 to 3 weeks. And so, unfortunately, I'm leaving tomorrow. I'm off for a week, and but I think everything is going to be is under control, and I know that Ray and Wendy have it going on, and then our new executive assistant, she starts October 7th, Tara Doffelmeyer. We're really fortunate to get her from the county. Their loss is our tremendous gain, and that will fill out our team, I think. And I think that I think all existing employees have done such a great job also welcoming, you know, they've welcomed me in, and they've welcomed Tori, and they've welcomed Faith Reeson and Tori Grant, and they'll welcome Tara. I think it's going to be pretty neat and pretty special. And the commission, too, you guys have been great reaching out and get to meet these folks. They're pretty neat. Really, you got to work on the budget and got lots of deliverables and make sure we get I'm all prepped, ready. We'll get any contracts out, get everything executed today. And that's it, I think, in a nutshell.
Okay. Our next regular meeting will be Wednesday, October 23rd at 6:30 p.m. I'm going to verify. I think, was that one that was interfered with a...
I think so.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
We have a small ports conference.
Yeah, that will be in Leavenworth, so we won't be here.
We'll have to address that, yeah.
So... yeah, we might put it off till the 30th.
We could do it in the morning if we wanted to, but I think we try to have it in the evening so that different people can attend different meetings, you know.
Right.
So it's a discretionary thing.
WPPA is the 24th, and it doesn't actually start it till 1, I think.
On the 24th?
On the 24th.
Okay, so we can go ahead the 23rd if we change it till 9 a.m.?
Maybe we could do it in the morning.
Again?
Yeah.
Okay, so we are going to change that meeting October 23rd to 9 a.m. so that the commissioners can go to that conference. So I'm going to remember this time that I need a motion to adjourn.
That
we adjourn.
There you go. And I'll second that.
Meeting adjourned at 11:16.
Excellent.